Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Tim Hewell. And before you listen to the documentary from the BBC World Service, I'd like to tell you about a slogan and a land, where I explore a land, a conflict, and a slogan that divide many opinions around the world.
I would consider putting on personal protection gear.
Bulletproof vest.
Yeah, just in case.
I journey across the contested region, referred to in the equally contested slogan, from the river to the sea, 90 kilometres from the River Jordan to the Mediterranean. You lay down in front of the tractor. Weren't you scared?
No.
He don't scared. I will die just one time.
In a two-part documentary, I'll cross the occupied West Bank and Israel, hearing from both sides in this dispute and finding out what it means to live here.
We know that they want to kill us, that they want this country or this land.
But with such fierce divisions, can there ever be a peaceful resolution? To hear a slogan and a land, scroll back in this podcast to the 17th of July.
So we've just stopped at a parking lot in downtown LA. There's big buildings behind us.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Here, we'll move so you can pull out.
There is a small metal structure. It's a heart and a cross, the Sacred Heart. And Arlene and Christine are going to try and take this one down.
Oh, wow. This is going to be tricky.
And then we need to extend this thing.
It's quite high up. Do you think you can reach it?
I'm too short.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Nasrin Tavakoli-Farr, and in this episode of Heart and Soul, which explores personal approaches to spirituality from around the world, I've come to Los Angeles to meet a group of atheist activists who are carrying out some pretty controversial work.
One or two like that.
I'm with Christine Jones. She's president of a non-profit called Atheists United. The people around her holding the ladder are called pirates, and they are out on a hunt. What are they hunting, you ask? They've gathered to remove religious signs that have been placed on public property. I watched them take down plastic, cardboard, and wooden signs with messages like Jesus Saves in both English and Spanish. It's quite a sight, seeing this motley crew made up of men and women, people who are white, black and Latino, a scientist and a video game developer. Even though several of the group identify as atheist, it's not faith that bothers them, but the way religion has, as they see it, invaded public spaces and American lives.
We're just going to find the right tools.
There are now around half a dozen people with bright yellow vests holding the ladder and checking for safety. One of them stands in the road to stop cars from getting too close to the ladder. And soon, Christine is able to make the sculpture come loose.
It appears to have been screwed in with quite a long screw. Okay, cool.
So, yeah, this is, I guess, what's called a Sacred Heart, and it looks like rebar that's been welded and bent to look like a heart plus a cross combined. And that was affixed to the telephone pole pretty high up, maybe about 12 feet high. Definitely metal.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm Naz.
Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I've come to the offices of Atheists United in the historic Filipino town area of LA. They have a first floor office in a building belonging to the Center for Inquiry, a nonprofit who advocate for reason, science, and a secular society. The office is pretty spacious, and they seem like a really organized and professional group. I'm here to meet the people who are behind the sign removals, the executive director of Atheists United, Evan Clark, and vice president, Arlene Rios.
We're just outside my office right now, and I pulled out some of our bigger signs. So I've got some metal versions. You can kind of hear it's like a strong metal sign. They're a little bit heavy, and they've stenciled words onto them. So this one, for instance, says, Jesus is coming. Are you ready? And are you are just the letters. This one says, repent and believe in Jesus. This one was pulled probably off of a fence. But yeah, come on over here.
So we've got some banners that Arlene's unfurling onto the floor.
We've got this is like a 6-foot banner here. It's all capital, Trust Jesus. We have this one over here, Prayer Changes Things, 2 Chronicles 7:14.
There's one you were all giggling about earlier, so
yeah,
let's
see if I can find that one for you. If it's going to be this one. So this one, I was driving home from Arizona, and I came across a bridge that had this sign, and I immediately pulled over and said, okay, I know that's religious, I'm going to go get it. And then once I got closer, I realized they totally misspelled what they were going for. Handwritten spray paint says, Jesus is King! Accept it. Except accept is spelled with E-X-C-E-P-T. Which definitely has a different meaning, and they really could have used some spell check.
Evan is not at all how I expected him to be. I thought I'd meet a sort of angry hippie type, or a cynical hipster, you know, with shaggy hair and a dark hoodie, one of these people who's seemingly low-key but also has all the most expensive and latest tech gadgets. He's not that at all. He's clean-cut, with short dark hair and a healthy complexion, and a lot of energy. And he's also very organized. Evan's the kind of guy who I suspect is going to run for office sometime soon. We settled so I could delve into Evan's journey with, or rather without, God.
Yeah, so I grew up in Massachusetts, about an hour outside of Boston. My parents thought it was a good idea to put me in Catholic school in first grade, and I immediately hated it. And what was unique about my school was we did Latin Mass before every class, and makes church extra boring for a first grader. So I had trouble paying attention to begin with. I started asking questions that even the nuns were having trouble answering when I was in first grade. Never really liked the answers that I was getting around questions of God. So I remember specifically at the same time falling in love with science and the natural world. And I just was so blown away by like the concept of molecules in first grade, that there are these things that are so small we can't see with the human eye, and that we understand the world to such specificity. And yet over here I've got all these really old funky stories about, you know, mostly the Old Testament that they're trying to teach us in first grade. That just didn't feel right. They just didn't seem to make sense. They felt like fairy tales. I think I was 12 years old, maybe. And I was flipping through a dictionary, probably trying to avoid reading during some reading time in class. And yeah, I just found this word, atheist, lack of belief in God or gods. And I just said, that's me. There's a word for me. I have an identity. And I started to tell people I was an atheist. And that's when I quickly learned that's not a popular word.
Despite all this, Evan actually went to a religious university, California Lutheran University.
For some reason, I just fell in love with the campus. I really cornered the tour guide. It was like, okay, how religious is this school? Like, do I have to be religious to go here? And they gave this beautiful answer. If the school is as religious as you want it to be, or as secular as you want it to be. And anytime we do teach religion, it is from an academic and historical sense. And that was good enough for me. I said, I'm always comfortable interacting with religion as long as they're comfortable letting me be fully atheist.
Evan set up the first secular student society at the university. That's where he realized the need for such a space and for community, not just for atheists, but also for people who are questioning their faith.
Do you remember your first meeting and how many people showed up and kind of just the vibe?
Yeah, I do remember our first meeting. We probably had about, 10 or 12 of us. And it was amazing. I think we talked for 4 hours. We had this really, really good conversation about why a group like this might matter, what the potential of a group like this is. And what shocked me, because I've identified as atheist as far back as I can remember, was the people who had such a fresh secular perspective. They were at Cal Lutheran maybe with a religious scholarship from their church. They have parents who are deeply religious and would be upset that to find out their children are not religious. Kind of discovered that the need for secular community is so much deeper than I thought. There are so many ways in which community can provide a safe space for you to ask questions, for you to figure out your identity, and for you to express yourself in ways that I haven't had to question for a long time, but was extremely valuable to my peers.
We're in downtown LA. We're in an area called Bunker Hill. There used to be lots of residential houses here, like Victorian, but they tore them down. We're actually going through a tunnel right now, which I find it like really cool. On both sides, there's graffiti.
Arlene Rios is Evan's colleague, a middle-aged woman with a short bob of salt and pepper hair, a soft voice, and a really gentle air. I can imagine her being super compassionate during a crisis. Arlene had a very different upbringing to Evan, growing up in the Los Angeles area to Mexican parents. Whilst she says her family wasn't hugely religious, her grandmother was, and religion was a big part of the culture as well. After years of questioning faith, she was in the military when she decided to be true to herself and to embrace the title of being an atheist, a decision that brought consequences for Arlene.
My sister at the time, when she found out that I was an atheist, she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she actually uninvited me to come spend like the summer, and I was so heartbroken. I cried for like 2 or 3 days, and you know, because I've always had such a really close, like, tight bond with my sister, and it really affected me.
Like Evan, Arlene also set up a group for atheists, this time for Latino atheists in Fresno, in California.
I wanted for other Latinos like myself to get together and connect and just build a community and talk amongst each other, all the different obstacles that we experience being Latinos or Latinx, Latinas here in the United States. And so I started the group, Fresno Latino Atheists.
What are specific challenges in being an atheist as someone who's Latino?
One of them is if you don't believe in God, I feel that other Latino people will say, oh, they're devil worshipers. If they don't believe in God, they must believe in the devil. And no, that's not the case. I don't believe in God and I don't believe in the devil. For example, there is a woman that came to the group here in San Gabriel that I also created under the umbrella of Atheists United. And she was telling us about how her mom called the priest and they were doing an exorcism on her.
I'll just draw that up.
There's a sign here. Is this in Spanish?
Yeah, we have a few Spanish-speaking signs that we found. So this is a popular one. It says Cristo Salva. And then we have another one. So this sign we actually have almost 100 of. This is the most popular sign in Los Angeles. It's the Jesus, the way, the truth, the life, John 14:6. And these we've actually found Spanish versions of.
Jesus, el camino, la verdad y la vida. And then it says Juan 14:6.
Atheists United have started an interactive map where people can report signs they see, not just around LA, but all over the US. If you see a religious sign on public property, you pop a pin on the map and ideally also post a photo of the sign. Now, anyone can see the map, and you'll see lots of maroon-coloured pins with a cross on them. These are signs that have been reported and that are still up. If someone takes one of these signs down, the pin changes to a black-coloured one with a pirate ship on it. What's interesting is when you zoom out of Los Angeles, out of California, and start seeing the entire USA. You'll see a lot of black and blue pins in California, meaning signs that have been taken down, as well as in Texas. And there are an enormous number of maroon-coloured pins in the Midwest and the South. Who is putting these up?
An evangelical pastor, street preacher named Brent Farley, who is from North Carolina, he travels the country putting these up. We know of at least 600 that he's put up across the U.S. because we track where he puts them on social media. And we've been able to add about 300 or 400 to our map and take down about 100 so far. Front side of the sign says Jesus Saves. It's this kind of Star Trek-y font. This sign is famous for being at the January 6th insurrection.
Just to remind you, January 6th is when supporters of Donald Trump attacked the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C. to prevent Joe Biden from being confirmed as president. A few days earlier, Donald Trump had given a speech while holding up a Bible, Some of his supporters carried Christian banners.
And on the back of the signs, they have a bunch of texts that include Jesus saves, but you must believe and call on him, Romans 10:9.
Many Christians were shocked by this mixing of Christian imagery with right-wing politics and by the rise of Christian nationalism in the United States. But pirate Arlene, who's of Mexican descent, was not surprised.
I just kind of find it that, like, Christians here in this country are just very in your face.
Do you find the signs related to some sort of white Americanism in any way?
Yeah, like, this country was founded on violence. It was founded on enslaving people. And they used the Bible or religion to justify doing this. I mean, in the New Testament, they talk about how you should treat your slave. And I just find that so, like, it's very bothersome. Yeah, so I think it's very much ingrained into our country and how we think. And, I mean, slowly, like, the religious folks have really been encroaching.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
A $6 billion con.
It didn't take long for it to spread like wildfire.
You got to take a look at this really crazy gold stock. A buddy of mine got in at a dime.
Which destroyed lives and devastated communities.
Every little town across the nation, people have shares in this.
We lost everything.
And to date, no one has been brought to justice.
Somebody knows more than we know.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. All episodes are available now. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, and for this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm in Los Angeles with Evan Clark, the executive director of the nonprofit Atheists United, who's telling me about why he's been taking down religious street signs on public property. It's so interesting talking to Evan. He's articulate and sharp and was probably a good debater at school. And he has an almost religious zeal and passion in his beliefs about unbelief.
I think one of the most important issues of our time, which is how do we build community and build political power for one of the least recognized but largest demographics of people in the world, the non-religious, the secular, the atheists. And today, millions of people are leaving religion or are growing up without a religious identity, but they don't have a community option. They don't have a place to raise their kids, to volunteer with, to have people that will visit you in the hospital when you're sick. These are all things that religions have traditionally provided beyond their beliefs.
I wanted to know what sparked his idea to track and take down these signs.
So it's 2020 and the pandemic is in full swing, right? I'm home and it's Christmas Day. And like a lot of atheists, like a lot of Jewish people who aren't Christian, right? I go get Chinese food usually on Christmas Day. And so I go onto Hollywood Boulevard and I'm at this Chinese food restaurant and I'm waiting outside for my order. And on a palm tree right in front of the restaurant, I find this paper sign that says repent or hell. And I was looking at it while I was waiting and I was getting kind of frustrated. And I said, you know what? I bet nobody ever takes those down. Screw it. I'll take that down. So my girlfriend watches me go over, huff and puff, take that sign down, throw it in the trash. But when I get home, I start thinking about the sign more and I realized that they were targeting Jews and atheists on Christmas. Like, they knew we would be there and that they were trying to target us. It was an evangelical sign trying to convert people to their belief. It wasn't innocent. It wasn't put up by the store owner. It was people who came into the neighborhood to illegally place propaganda. And unless somebody like me was willing to take it down, it could stay up for months or years until the weather or the local officials were to take it down.
Evan, I feel like a lot of people listening might think that, okay, well, these people are just expressing their own interest in religion and God.
Right.
What is the problem with these signs being out?
If they put that sign on their front yard, completely legal, totally fine. Put up all the signs you want. If they did it at their church property, if they bought a billboard, that's not an issue. I will defend until my last breath their right to have free speech around their religion. But we have limits around religious speech in our society, and for good reason. because we also protect the freedom from religion. You need to be able to live without religion in certain places. Well, our roads are also public property, just like a school or a courthouse. It is owned by all of the citizens of our society. They are paid for by taxpayers. They have city staff that manage and maintain those streets. Yeah, so the First Amendment is the second half of this, which doubles how important this is. And there's lots of case law that protects that government property and government land is meant to be exclusively secular so that it is free for all people, regardless of religious identity. The problem is if we allow one religion to prioritize their speech on public property, all others who are not that religion will not feel welcome. And we can't truly have a pluralistic state without keeping some spaces secular and open for all.
Would you be okay with the situation if Jewish people were putting up signs and Hindu people and Muslims and, you know, if there was kind of a diversity of religious signs, but on public property?
Right. So there's two ways to look at this, right? We can look at this as just the freedom of religion, and we can have a religious arms race of signs, and every religion can be putting up more and more signs, or we can also protect the freedom from religion. And to me, the freedom of religion means nothing without the freedom from religion. And so as atheists who don't identify as religious, you know, we can't exist in society of just religious freedom. We have to also have freedom from religion. So what happens is if we don't guarantee some spaces as secular, we're then privileging certain religions over others. And that's wrong. You know, I don't think a Muslim kid should be forced to see Jesus Save signs every day on their way to school. I don't think a Jewish kid should have to see signs that say you're going to hell if you don't believe in Christ. I don't think an atheist child should be forced to see signs that say, yeah, I don't know, whatever terrible things, right? Like these signs are designed to propagate a specific religion and privilege a certain religion, and without challenge, you know, we lead to a nationalism of religion. We lead to unchecked religious privilege.
And it's not just atheists who believe in this work and who are concerned about the social and political implications of these signs. I went to meet a Christian pastor who's taken down some signs with Evan Clark.
I'm Ryan Pryor. I'm 35 years old, and I'm a pastor in the north of the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles in a neighborhood called Mission Hills.
The church is in an open, modern building and is decked out in pride flags. Ryan looks like a friendly hipster with a cap and a beard and a denim jacket. Ryan grew up in Texas before studying religion and then going to a seminary in California. Mission Hills is a progressive church, and the congregation includes people who feel marginalized from their church or religious background, whether due to gender, sexuality, or their beliefs, and are not feeling allowed to question church teaching.
Questions for us are essential to faith, but whether that's people questioning whether or not they believe in a God or the God that they grew up sort of thinking and hearing about, the questioning and working those questions out in a community is sort of core to who Mission Hills hopes to be.
I wanted to know his initial thoughts about the Atheist Street Pirates.
From the first pitch, I loved the idea. To me, his pitch was cheeky and funny, and I thought so rightly subversive in the hopes of having a pluralistic society, which is the goal is to have people be their whole true selves. And to me, that is a Christian project in the sense that you cannot have a free society without everybody being able to be their whole full self.
Ryan, just so that we get a sense of these, what kind of things are on these signs? I mean, you mentioned having seen one a few days ago, in fact. I don't know if you remember what it said.
Yeah, you'll usually see the Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And from a particular, usually conservative Christian perspective, that verse is implying Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life. It is not an inclusive, expansive message about love and equality. It is saying something about the exclusivity, which is a message to people implicitly or explicitly who don't religiously identify as Christian, is we're the only way. And that message is inherently an exclusive message, which is not something that I or our community would want to support, which is the inclusion and acceptance of everybody as they are, however they would want to identify. There is a whole set of Christian normalization in American society, Christian supremacy, that goes unquestioned. And taking the signs down is not only cleaning up the streets, but it is saying something about the deeper aspects of what goes unquestioned in American Christian society, which does usually normalize a Christian identity and a Christian perspective.
You keep mentioning politics. Can you tell me more about that? Because I feel like some of us might think, well, Jesus saves. I mean, how is that a political statement?
One way that Christianity functions in the U.S. is that you have statements like Jesus saves, or Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And what that is actually doing is in some ways distracting from the actual sort of political involvement of many of these communities. And so it tends to be, actually, we just care about the heart, or we care about saving souls, or we're doing a lot of good in our community. But in actuality, you have to look at how these political structures are actually upheld by a kind of Christian supremacy. And so we see that in all levels, and I think increasingly in all levels of government throughout the U.S.
So some people might say that, okay, cool, you have a problem with these signs. Why don't you put up your own signs, especially given that, you know, you are a pastor? Why don't you just go out and put up signs that counter what these people are saying?
One of the things that the Christian tradition tells us that Jesus' life was centered around is liberation, freedom. And if we really believe in that, one of the most subversive things we can do is to open space back up. So it's not about tacking our sign over somebody else's sign, but it's actually about cleaning up something that shouldn't be there in the first place. And in doing so, you subversively give the space and the land back to the people.
All right, gonna do a little crowbar action. It's one of the hardest staple ones I've ever taken down.
Watching this crowbar action whilst I was up a ladder with Ryan, on the side of the street, with workers grabbing tacos to the sound of Mexican music under the hot sun, and cars whizzing past in an industrial part of LA, I thought of something Pastor Ryan Pryor told me. You see, so much of Christianity is about spreading the word. And yet Ryan wasn't into that at all, which seemed surprising for a pastor.
Even from the Christian perspective, Jesus came and disrupted the social and religious and political hierarchies of his time. We have to remember that taking the signs down is a form of nonviolent resistance. And so it's right in line with any of the nonviolent resistance traditions. There have been Christians for hundreds of years that have taken part in nonviolent Christian resistance. And this is just another form of that in the way of Jesus being a disruptor. And so I think that is right in line with a pirate spirit.
Do you think Jesus would have joined the atheist street pirates on hunt?
Absolutely. 100%.
All right. Close these in and there we go.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. This episode of Heart and Soul was presented and produced by me. I'm Nasrin Tavakoli-Farr, and the series producer was Rajiv Gupta.
A $6 billion con.
It didn't take long for it to spread like wildfire.
You got to take a look at this really crazy gold stock. A buddy of mine got in at a dime.
Which destroyed lives and devastated communities.
Every little town across the nation, people have shares in this.
We lost everything.
And to date, no one has been brought to justice.
Somebody knows more than we know.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. All episodes are available now. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.